What's up, guys? Welcome to the Flawed Dad's Guide to Parenting, the podcast all about the average flawed dad learning to be a better parent. Today, we're talking about the lost hour of sleep, a topic from Poe Bronson and Ashley Merriman's book, Nurture Shock, New Thinking About Children. Most children today are not getting enough sleep they need, and it's resulting in a loss of cognitive development and memory. Stick around and listen as two flawed dads figure out how not to screw up our kids too bad. Hey, Graham, how are you doing this week?
Hey, Warren. Again, pretty good. Coming off a bit of a frustration, you know, trying to put the youngest one down to sleep. It was a marathon session. Kept getting out of her bed, so took me an hour and a bit to put her down. But
oh, that's always fun.
I guess there's a personal satisfaction when they finally do go to sleep and, you know, you have conquered the beast.
Yeah, but don't you feel like you've lost an hour of your life fighting that?
Yes. It would have been nice to have that hour to do something else for sure. Clean up, just sit on the floor crying.
So you know, there's
a bunch of things you could think of.
When you're doing,
it's a broad spectrum.
When you're doing that bedtime, like what's it involve? Are you? I know you read regularly because you and I have talked about this a lot.
Yes.
But do you read for like in this case? Did you read for the solid hour?
No. Oh. No. No, none of that. No, that was all done pre that time. So the hour is not just a solid, you know, me trying to put her down, but it is not being able to go anywhere else because she climbs out of her crib now.
Okay.
And so she's in the dark. You think that everything is fine, but then she crawls out of the crib, opens the door, and then out she pops.
Yeah.
And so, you know, at least my mindset is trying to get to her before, you know, she gets out back into the light and gets
and
into
really
something else. And, you know, I'm trying to snap that while she's been in the darkness.
Right.
And just like pick her up silently, put her down. And, you know, the first few times is okay, you know, they're like time to go to sleep, blankets on. And then, you know, towards the end, you're like, you know, you curse in the side of your head, thinking, like, just go to sleep. That book, you know, that
yes,
go the fuck to sleep.
Yeah, and isn't it Samuel L. Jackson?
Samuel L. Jackson. That's the yeah. Samuel L. Jackson.
Samuel L. Jackson. Yeah.
Samuel L.
And so, are you just sitting across the room in a chair? Is that how you do it?
I'm not in the room. I do close the door.
Okay, you're close the door. You're outside, but you're listening.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you can sort of hear her. Try and hurdle over sometimes, but mm-hmm. I mean,
so you're leaned up against the door with a cup.
That's
and
right.
Just quietly sobbing as the yeah. time ticks by.
I watch a lot of YouTube videos. What else are you gonna do? You know, email's all cut up. Mm-hmm. You know, what else are you gonna do?
Well, it was
time?
In the first 15 minutes.
That's
and then
right.
It's, yeah, something else has to.
Yeah, and usually it's pretty fast, but this tonight, you know, not the case. So
yeah,
fortunately, not always the case, but.
And so did you build to getting out of the room? Like, did you start off in the room and then after a period of time, you were across the room and then
no.
after a period of time, it was just straight cold turkey out of the room.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are a few, cause I remember reading a while ago about trying to put kids down to sleep and it was, you know, you don't want to, be there as I remember, at least the one that I picked up on and thought that mm-hmm. it made sense was you want to get them to the point that they're like calm and ready to go to sleep, but you want to get them to build their own I go to sleep mechanism, whatever it is,
right?
Self-soothing. That's
self-soothing.
What it was. Self-soothing
okay.
mechanism.
Yeah, that makes sense.
In order for them to build that themselves, this is a long time ago, back
yeah.
you know when they're first napping and babies and not climbing out of crib stage,
right?
So that just sort of carried on, get to the point of that, and
yeah.
bounce.
Now, this is a topic of keen interest to me because, as yes. you know, both my 10-year-old and 6-year-old both do not sleep through the night at this point, which is really frustrating for both my wife and I.
Yeah,
and so I'm really interested. I don't know if we can roll this back and like, you know, go back and fix the issues that we've now created, but I'm certainly interested in providing advice to new fathers on some of the things that we can do and for sure. how sleep affects our kids. Because I really do agree with, you know, the idea that they were proposing in this book was that there is a physical impact to a loss of sleep.
Absolutely. And I think that this topic, this beginning part that we're just talking about, that this is definitely a conversation for another time, another longer dedicated time to what we sleep have training. Learned, the sleep training, the early phase sleep training side. Because I'd like to say that I'm actually pretty darn good at that side. I've tested the first time,
right?
And the second time was bumpier and different. And then I grabbed reins and
just a regular Einstein, hey, like testing scientific theory with your children. And... That's
right. The first one required no testing. That's the thing.
It just worked.
She just and I can. I've thought of the reasons why, and happy to we'll talk about that.
Which is funny because with my second, that's the same thing. She goes to sleep immediately, and it's easy. But with the other two, oh man, every night in our beds, and you know it's tough. Okay, so let's go back to let's go back to Nurture Shock, and Poe Bronson and Ashley Merriman's idea of the lost hour of sleep.
That's right, and then we talked about. I guess before we really get into that, let's debrief.
Yeah.
In podcast number 2.
Yeah, we talked about the way to praise children.
That's right.
And that the way we were doing it wasn't necessarily the right way.
Yes, and this was all learned again from the same book.
Yeah.
So we're really driving into I think the second chapter by now. So we've got like 900 chapters to go. We'll just keep rolling on these different topics. It's a good book. Definitely worth reading across the board.
Yeah, so Poe and Ashley, if you're listening to this, we've quite enjoyed the book.
That's right. Yeah, we're in chapter 2. And we've had an hour and a half of conversations about it so far. So the power of praise, you know, go back and listen to that, you know, if you're listening right now and haven't listened to it before. The concept was just about how we're using the wrong words, as you already said, potentially. And by sticking to more the behavioral trait of what it is they're trying to do rather than saying like great job, it's like, oh wow, you know, you've put a lot of work into this, I can, you know, your hard work's paying off, or things like that, things that they can actually control. And I've been really trying to work on that, about that. I did read the book a while ago, so I've been sort of working on it for the past while too.
Yeah.
And it's definitely something that is not an overnight thing. You don't just turn the switch thing. Oh, and there's no problem. I'm just going to cut out all this stuff and just go into this other sort of mindset of talking. So it is definitely something that is a learned trait that is never, you know, still learning.
Yeah, I know it was something. It was something that you had mentioned to me. Oh, I mean, it's probably years ago now that you first mentioned it to me, that the idea of how we praise our kids. And even ever since then, I had been trying to make that change in how I praise the kids. But I still catch myself every once in a while. You know, I'll give Naveena a hug before dropping her off at school and going, hi, beautiful, or you know, I'm so proud of you. You know, you're so smart, or whatever it may be. And then I have to correct and go, you know, I'm really proud of how hard you're trying. I'm really proud of the effort. Yeah. I'm really proud of the compassion that you showed your sister. You know, trying to ensure that I'm praising those controllable factors, exactly. Not just the absolute.
It's hard. 100%. It's hard to, because it needs more work.
Mm.
I mean, it's easy just to default. And not that that sounds, you know, shameful or something like that. No, it's just, that's the top of the mind. You know, it's sort of, the easy part is the thing that usually comes to mind first. Like, oh, you know, like, great job. Like, your drawing was awesome. This is fantastic, right? And you think you're doing a good job about it.
But I did that today, knowing that we were having this conversation tonight. My youngest, Lilia, came to me with a drawing. And she had some writing on it. And I made sure that I said to her, I'm really proud of how hard you're working at your writing. Rather than saying, this is great writing, or, you know, you're so smart, or you write so well, it was really based on the effort that she put in and that she was continuing to try to get better. Yeah. I'm really proud of you for continuing to improve on your writing, the things that are controllable. And, you know, I you're not going to see impact on the first day. It's a pat on the back moment. Yeah, yeah, it was. I mean, it's great that we're talking about these things and then their actual practical application to them. I'm hoping that over years and years, this type of thing is going to generate that type of positive result in that it's effort-based rather than just absolute.
Yeah, exactly. For me, there was a moment a while ago where she was, McKenna, the oldest one, was saying, you know, look how much better I am at getting at this. And I say, oh, wow, you know, and how is it that you're getting better? She says, because I've been practicing, Dad. That's right, yes. So it's... The double check reaffirming thing that yes, my messages are maybe getting through. Practicing is very important, and have at it. So, you know, a couple of those moments every now and then make you, yes, they are listening sometimes.
Yes.
Yeah. Most of the time. They're listening at the times that seems like you don't think they are.
Yeah.
And you can be talking about whatever a lot of the times.
I think, tuned out. You know, just as you mentioned, though, espousing the value of practice is incredibly important, right? I can't tell you how frustrating it is when, you know, Allie, my middle one, who's a perfectionist, gets really down on herself that she can't complete something perfectly the first time.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, that's quite possibly because of the way that I have praised or criticized in the past, in that, okay, you're doing this, you're great at this, or you're not doing well at this. Yeah. And if I changed it to rewarding effort, you know, this could potentially solve this whole problem of perfectionism.
Failing is very important. Business individuals, there are a lot of successful individuals have failed way more times than they've succeeded because they've learned what not to do because of failing. So failing is a good thing as long as you know, take something from it and try and do better from it.
Yeah.
And I know that's one thing that I remember a long time ago, this is backtracking, back when I was first trying skiing. I didn't want to ski for the life of me for the longest time, relatively speaking. I can't remember how old I was, maybe 8, 9, maybe 10, somewhere in that range.
Right.
And I remember I was getting annoyed that I was going down a hill and I was falling a whole lot. And my dad, I remember saying, like, it's good to fall. You need to fall at least some crazy high number, 70 times a day. If you don't fall 70 times a day, then you're not trying hard enough. And this is important for you.
That's a really interesting way to put that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it stuck with me because then the numbers started to get a little smaller, but you would make you haven't fallen at least 4 times a day. That means you're not pushing yourself enough. You need to keep falling.
Again, effort-based.
Yes.
Yeah. Very
interesting. Which was interesting remembering that. And so I've carried that for, I'm sure he won't remember a damn thing about that, because the things that we remember, you know, they don't remember anything about. But I have said that at other activity-based things like skating just recently. Well, you got to fall, because falling means you're trying hard. So it's good that you're falling.
Yeah.
Saying sort of the same thing. So
that's good.
Yeah.
So it goes beyond praise. It goes in the way that we provide instruction. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. So let's get into the lost hour of sleep.
Yes. Okay. So we're going this nurture shock one. If you recall, from the episode 2 there, a lot of studies that they reference,
right.
Which is good. You know, it's sort of, it's hard to, you know, there's one thing for you and I just anecdotally saying, oh, well, this worked for us. Mm-hmm. And that's a sample size of potentially 2 or 3 kids.
Yeah.
And so it's not very big. And so you can sort of scoff at it and say, well, it's probably not going to work.
Oh, but come on. We're not scientists. This is all anecdotal. That's the whole point of the podcast, is to be anecdotal. is so that everybody else out there realizes that being flawed isn't the worst thing in the world. Because we're 2 heavily flawed individuals. So
we like to think we're perfect.
There's no misgivings there.
So according to the National Sleep Foundation in the U.S., 90% of U.S. parents think their child is getting enough sleep.
Okay. So 90%.
90%.
Okay.
So there's 10% out there that's like, no, there's no way. I'm very self-aware to this. No, they're
dead tired. There was no middle ground. It was 90% believe that they're correct amount, and 10% no. There wasn't a, you know, 15% margin of error or anything like that. Okay,
cool. I assume that 10% means that they see their child just sleeping in their Cheerios in the morning time. Like, The Simpsons. Yeah. They're not getting enough sleep.
Maybe shouldn't have kept them up till 3 o'clock in the morning watching The Simpsons with me. Right, okay.
Worth it, though.
Bonding moment.
That's right. So the within that same survey, though, 60% of high schoolers, they say they just have extreme daytime sleepiness, and 25% of them they say that their grades have suffered because of that.
Okay.
So it's they're openly saying, hey, yeah, my grades have suffered because not good enough sleep, which is weird. At the same time, if you're high school, you should be reasonably aware of that. If you're saying, oh yeah, my school has dropped off because I'm not getting enough sleep.
Like, right. Oh,
it's a pretty easy solution there, buddy.
Yeah, get a little bit more sleep. But there are so many distractions, particularly nowadays.
Oh, it's so easy. I know. Anyway, so, and then they also said, depending on what study you look at, it says very specific, 20 to 33% of children or kids in this, I guess, high school are falling asleep at least once a week. In class.
In class.
In high school.
20 to 33% are falling asleep in class.
Can you imagine that being a teacher? It's, and looking back, in high school.
Did you, you never fell asleep in class in high school?
Not in high school, no.
Oh, I did for sure.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's amazing.
Well, I mean, boarding house, right? So.
But how many kids are there? Like, to me, I fall asleep in university. 100%.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I've done that because you're in a sea of humans, and you know.
English 100 or Psych 100. Yeah.
Well, anecdotally, in university, when I started the head bob, I was screw this. I'm just getting up and bouncing. Like I'm going back to bed here. This is no. What are we doing here? You know, I'm not listening to you. I'm not getting a good enough sleep. There's no sense
in. But Graham, learning through osmosis is such a powerful tool.
Perhaps
it's like sleeping with a textbook under your pillow, right? That works too.
These are all proven things.
I know. I definitely fell asleep in class in high school.
Huh.
But
People caught you, or you just were asleep and they didn't
care? No, you get woken up. You get woken up.
Okay.
But I mean, we had it was very long days. It was 8:15 until 5:15 because you had mandatory sports after school, and then there was study block in the evenings because it was boarding school, right?
Right.
And you know, even though there were lights out, you usually were up later, and by the time you're up, because you had to be up at 6:15 every morning in order to go to the food hall and that sort of thing, you know, you're not getting a whole lot of sleep because it's an academic school. And so it's very driven to do that. And so I'm wondering, you know, when they're talking about a lack of cognitive development because of loss of sleep, I'm wondering, did the school actually do me a disservice by not allowing me to get enough sleep because of the hours that it ran?
Well, and according to this, yes,
and they did. And it's particularly pertinent now because I look at my current situation with Naveena, my oldest. We're out of the house at 7 a.m. every morning to drive across the city to the school that she goes to.
Right.
Right. So she's in bed by 8, but she's up at 6. And I'm going to guess that this book is going to tell me that she's not getting enough sleep. that's my guess from this.
The book didn't actually tell how much sleep anyone should get. They just said that overall, children from elementary school through to high school get an hour less sleep per night than they did 30 years ago.
Okay.
So that's their basis of fact. And then they've looked on that. So they've done tests where... fourth graders and sixth graders were told to sleep in 30 minutes more or 30 minutes less per night.
Okay.
So your bedtime's whatever, 8 o'clock. No, you go to bed at 7:30 group and other group goes to bed at 8:30 if they're normally going to bed at 8.
Yeah.
And so that creates that hour difference of sleep, right? Some people want 30 minutes, some people. So that now it's an hour difference.
Now, in your house, I know you have pretty consistent sleep times, right? Like, you're fairly military.
It depends on whether I'm there or not.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough, yeah. different parenting styles within the household. I think that's a topic that we're going to be discussing
another time. Yeah, maybe different parenting. More, I actually will pay attention to the clock. And my wife, she is always doing something.
Yeah.
And that the priority of looking at the clock and being aware of that has never been, you know, that's not because of me. That's just been her thing since she was little nothing.
Right.
She still can't get to things on time. So a few times she can, but most of the time.
Because it's inconsistent in our household. Tonight, you know, we're up watching The Mandalorian with the kids and you know, the youngest is going to bed at 9 o'clock at night, which is probably way too late for her. I mean, it is a weekend, so she can sleep in the morning, but.
But our youngest also went to bed at 9 o'clock too.
Yeah.
Because I spent an hour trying to put her down.
Fair enough.
So sometimes, you know,
that's right.
She went to bed at 9 and you watched The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
I did not watch The Mandalorian and both went downstairs.
Whose loss is that? Exactly. Sitting outside of her door, you could have been watching The Mandalorian.
Hashtag Star Wars.
Hashtag Star Wars. Yeah.
So the performance gap between that hour differential was bigger than the gap between a fourth grader and a sixth grader.
Okay.
As in, the sixth grader, put it another way, the sixth grader that ended up with 30 minutes less sleep compared to a fourth grader getting 30 minutes more sleep, they were learning almost at the same grade.
Wow. That's a big cognitive difference for a half hour swing.
A loss of a 1 hour sleep is equivalent to loss of 2 years of cognitive, it says cognitive maturation and development.
Wow.
2 years.
That's really significant.
That's
I never would have guessed that it was going to be that large.
No, that's, you know, so you get an hour more sleep. You are in, you're in third grade or grade three, depending on which country you're in. And now you get an hour less sleep. You're running at a grade one.
I mean, you think about my kids, a 2 year difference. That's the difference between doing long division and simple subtraction.
Right.
Right. The cognitive maturation and development, that's really significant.
Yeah, that's huge. And I know for us, our daughter, our oldest, who's in now the first grade or grade one, we are Canadian overall here. So I'm going to say grade one a lot more than first grade, but I'm aware that in the U.S.
it's first grade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can tell. You can tell which country they're in because of that. I lost my train of thought now just because of that.
You're thinking about the U.S.
I'm talking about the U.S. too much and thinking about them. I lost where I was going with that. So it'll come back to me.
Yeah.
The thing about doing live recordings.
Exactly. Exactly.
It is. So, yeah, I mean, that's huge. There's a question. Now it came back to me. She is not always Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays. She is 10 minutes late for school.
Okay.
Quite consistently. And that's because we don't wake her up.
Oh.
So we don't set an alarm or anything like that. She sleeps until when she sleeps. And then we run as fast as we can to try and get to school on time. Mm-hmm. What I've learned just from her, we had late nights, sort of Fridays, sort of maybe a later night, you know, fun time, maybe a little bit of Saturday, and then Sunday is crack it down, let's get a good night's sleep again and sort of wrap this up. And Mondays was usually pretty good, but I found it seems like she takes about 2 days in order to really sleep in and make up for things. So
okay.
if she goes to sleep on Friday late, and then Saturday she sort of wakes up the same amount of time.
Yeah.
Sunday she wakes up the same, and then Monday she'll sleep in even though we cracked it down earlier.
Right.
So it seems like a 2 day thing for, at least for her.
Recovery,
across the
like
board,
a recovery from lost hours.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And so now we've sort of adjusted now thinking, okay, well let's have our late night on Thursday night or right. Wednesday night or something.
Yeah.
During the weekday, because you know, for us it's roughly the same. We're going to bed.
So you have decided to prioritize that extra sleep over getting to school on time.
Yeah.
And how have the teachers reacted to that so far?
They haven't said anything about it.
Perfect. Perfect. And, but
it's only the first grade, so they mark down the day later, whatever.
But knowing you, you would have no problem having that argument with the teacher anyways.
That's right.
Yeah. Here's the science.
Let me slide you a book of Nurture Shock.
Yeah, by Poe Bronson and Ashley Merriman. Yeah.
And tell you why. Exactly. Facts. Facts.
Based on science.
That's right. So, forget you. Anyways, that's how it works. So, it's supposedly, according to this book, it says tired children, they can't remember what they've learned because their neurons lose elasticity.
Okay.
So, they can't form new synaptic connections mm-hmm. That's needed in order to actually make a memory of sorts. So,
So, if I go back to psychology from university, the period of sleep allows your brain to create those, to cement those types of the things that you've learned. But I didn't realize that it carried forward into the day when you were learning, right? I just thought it was that it didn't allow you to form that long-term memory while you're going through your sleep cycle.
Yeah.
But I guess it's impacting your ability to learn even while you're awake.
I guess, yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And I guess conceptually, if you think back to some of the days that you had low sleep, and you think of those days, you're like, yeah, boy, I was...
Oh, it still happens.
I was groggy and I didn't really focus very much or I'm not... I mean, for me, university, I just left the class, so I didn't learn anything that time.
This is why neither of us are brain surgeons. Yeah.
Oh, that's...
That's why.
Oh, that's a little light bulb moment there. And so, yeah, it's wild. I mean, for me, again, small sample size, anecdotal or whatever it is, but, you know, I know a couple children in the same grade as McKenna. And they go to bed late. Mm-hmm. I know that for sure.
Like consistently.
Consistently. Like their bedtime is, one was at least 10 o'clock that they go to bed. Mm-hmm. Very late. And the difference between, you know, the academic level, it's mind blowing. You know, one's needing a lot more work and just
support.
Extra support and things like that. And you can just sort of tell from language-wise and other things.
Yeah.
Now, is that the full perspective? Maybe not. There's always way more things to it than just, you know, make your sleep, give them more sleep.
That's it. That's the solution. It's kind of like... solution. It's
all kids like are going to bed at 5 o'clock now.
The 10 tips from last week. That's all you have to do. You just have to do the one thing and it solves all of the problems. Extra sleep and you're cured.
I do know that it is weird, though. It seems for the times that I have put our kids to bed later, they've woken up way earlier than what they normally do. Like, it seems like an inverse. They go to bed earlier and they sleep longer. I don't know whether you've ever noticed that, but like,
I have. I've definitely noticed it.
It's so weird to me how that, you know, we've skipped naps before and we thought, oh, well, they've skipped their nap.
They'll
so
sleep.
They're going to sleep way longer this time. Like, we're going to be able to, you know, kick back and have our mornings to ourselves and things like that. And then they're up way earlier than what they should have
been. The brain seems to go into some sort of bizarre. Like deprivation mode.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when you don't have any fat, right, in your diet, and then you introduce a small amount of fat and your body's like, I'm going to hold on to that. Right. It's kind of like if you stop sleeping and then introduce some sleep, your body's like, I don't want this, I want to be awake, right? It's a very weird,
or just some type of punishment for the kid, the parents.
It's retribution. It's subconscious retribution.
You let me stay up and have fun. This is in your face. Don't let this happen again. So I don't know what it's like, you know, for you in your household. You've noticed that about going to bed earlier or later or not, or whether that's the case with your older kids, or, you know, again, I'm only talking about a 6-year-old now and a 2-year-old. So this is the,
well, Nevi has woken up just about every night since, you know, since she was born, but she suffers from night terrors, and her ADHD medication tends to have a prolonged impact on her ability to fall asleep, right? It's lasting later in the day, and so, you know, chemically her brain can't shut down until later. Add to that
which is tough.
ADHD makes things tough anyways. Yes. If you've ever listened to things like low arousal theory for ADHD kids and that sort of thing, or ADHD adults, you know, it's your brain seeks out that dopamine stimulation, and it's very difficult to calm your brain.
Yeah.
So I have a feeling that's a little bit more for her, whereas Allie, you know, at 8 is out immediately. I can leave the room. I don't have to worry about anything. Whereas Naveena, actually, you have to lie with her for her to fall asleep. She can't self-soothe, as you put it earlier.
Right.
It's just not possible. And then Lilia at 6 is very similar. She requires somebody there to help her go to sleep. So sleep training, I'm going to, when we do eventually talk about that, I'm going to lean to you to provide the education on that one, because it's never not something that's an 8-year-old well in our house. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty cold. with that stuff. So it's... The sleep training was not a shared thing between my wife and I. It was...
This is happening.
Well, no. It was... My wife was on board with it. Mm-hmm. No question about it. But she realized that there was no way that she'd be part of it.
Right.
It was, okay, yes, please fix this broken child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I cannot sleep. I need my sleep. I cannot continue with this. Like, you do what you have to do, but don't do it near me because I will cave.
Yeah.
I can't handle this.
Yeah.
See,
I was never around to be able to do that because I was traveling so much. Right. And so Rachel was left to it. And Rachel, similar to Vanessa, is way too compassionate to be able to leave a being crying in another room.
Everything's a weird, I mean, it sounds easy. It is way easier. Let me rephrase. It's way easier because we had a different set of circumstances. You know, McKenna and Kendra are 4 years apart from one another.
Right.
Whereas you have 3 children all in fairly tight zones from one another. So being left by yourself, I was left putting Kendra and McKenna down by myself, mm-hmm. you know, a couple of times, and Vanessa as other times herself. And it's a totally different game trying to put two down yourself,
yeah.
right? You're not able to spread. You have to work on one and the other.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine what it was like to have 3.
Yeah.
And trying to put them down too, and one getting up, and what are you going to do there? Mm-hmm. So you start to make concessions and other things just because you're trying to
survive,
handle this huge thing. So, you know, it's easy to point the finger until you realize what the situation is. You know,
yeah, like, oh, God, I totally agree.
I've been in that, and I mean, that's a single parent essentially because of you not actually physically being there.
Oh,
with
when
3 kids,
like, when Rachel's away, goodness. I have definitely turned to the kids and said, just get in bed with me because I'm so exhausted.
Yeah, you can't.
There's no way that I am gonna go from bedroom to bedroom to bedroom and then back to original bedroom and then back to third bedroom. Like, it's just not realistic.
I have so much respect for single parents.
Oh, it's
especially if you had more than, you know, a single parent with one child. I mean, let's not go into the single parent challenges anyways, but at least
it's man on man.
It's man on man. But
single running parent zone with 2 defense kids, when you're on your own,
forget about it. It's, I mean, and they probably start to get into routine and work things out maybe a little bit, but man, I'm sure there's some concessions just because
you have to.
Oh,
yeah. You're just trying to survive.
So much
at
respect
that point.
For that.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
So. That's, I mean, those are the main points that I've seen, just from my firsthand knowledge of seeing things, and otherwise, I mean, we're very fortunate at the end of the day. I mean, our children, you know, we've talked already about genetics versus
nature versus nurture,
et cetera. And maybe because of genetics, we're fortunate in that they sleep. You know, McKenna, you know, like an earthquake can be going on, a dance party or whatever it is can be going on beside her, and she will not wake up, which I am the same way.
You're dead to the world.
I'm dead to the world.
But you actually take extra steps to ensure that you're dead to the world. Like you put your phone on do not disturb and that sort of thing, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But it's the sound. Like if sounds go off or if children are crying or something happens during the night, Vanessa will wake up, you know, right away. A pin will drop and she'll be awake and saying, you know, did you not hear whatever it is in the morning? I'm like, you know the answer is. Yeah. I don't know what the heck's going on at nighttime. Yes, as far as I knew, I went to bed and now it's morning and that's what happened. It, you know, it was like 10 minutes ago to me. So it's...
Rachel's the same. We have a new puppy now, right? And so the puppy will sometimes whine in the middle of the night. And Rachel will turn to me in the morning and she'll say, oh, I had to get up at this time and this time and this time with the puppy. And she's like, how do you not hear him whining? I'm like... I have trained.
Cursing.
Yeah, I have trained to not wake up to that type of a sound. But a big part of that was because I was traveling so much before.
Yeah.
You know, and staying in hotels and that sort of thing. You have to learn to be able to sleep through any boarding house.
I've been trained
fraternity
since,
house.
Yeah, exactly. You know, there's so many moments in time where we've been trained for this.
Yeah.
Exactly. I know. I was trained since an early age.
Yeah.
You knowing my parents will make this more entertaining for you. my parents never got a babysitter, essentially from at least like they probably did. That's maybe a little far reaching, but I know for sure they brought me out.
I don't know if it's that far reaching knowing your
parents. No, it's not far reaching. Yeah. It's more likely true than not. They brought me out to dinners.
Yeah.
Like their late night dinners or whatever it was, I'd come along and I would crawl under the table
and sleep
and fall asleep.
Yeah.
And then when their dinner was finished, they'd lift up the.
Yeah. I can remember.
Like it's happened all the time.
Being at a family party, some friends of my parents' place. And I was probably 6 or 7 years old. And it was late into the night and, you know, mom and dad are partying because you met my parents. They're very social individuals. And I climbed under the grand piano of the people's house and fell asleep under their grand piano. And I can remember my dad having to drag me out from underneath the piano in order to get me into the car to go home. Right? You have to adapt to your situation and maybe those are the things that wind up lasting for years and years. But at the same time, maybe that's a reason, again, that you and I aren't, you know, brain surgeons or rocket scientists is because we were not getting the sleep that we needed for cognitive maturation and development.
We were falling asleep under pianos.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Now, if somebody had been playing Mozart while I was sleeping underneath it, maybe that would have counteracted the lost sleep, right? The whole, you know, listening to orchestral music while you're sleeping sort of thing. So. Was there anything else in there that that we needed to hit on with regards to that? Or
those are the main points. What I did find interesting was that it didn't say how much sleep that children actually needed, if they didn't know that, fine. But you may as well just include some type of research about it. You would think that the people reading this book are saying, wow, this is something I actually want to put in. It's not just I'm reading factoids about studies, etc. Yeah. It's like non-parents are reading these books. I can't see that.
Yeah.
I think the idea of
1 hour lost, like the half hour up and half hour down, results in 2 years of lower cognitive development is enough to make me say, okay, Rach, we need to get the girls to sleep a half hour earlier, right? Because if you think about how much of a difference that makes in their ability to form those long-term memories and the cognitive development, you know, that's compounding. That's a huge impact. So,
but it's not just, I mean, start with half hour and then work towards the hour.
To work towards the hour,
ideally.
Yeah.
And now, do they wake up Because of an alarm of some sort?
No, only for Naveena on school days because we have to leave so early. The other two are usually awake just because there's kind of noise in the house. Right. So Nevi and I are up. I'm usually feeding her by 6:30 so that we can be out the door at 7.
Yeah.
The other two will wake up as we're leaving, right around 7 o'clock, and then they're up. But they don't have school until 9. So they get a couple hours to kind of putter around in the morning. But Nevi and I, you know, we have an hour drive in the morning to get to school. So fortunately, we make the most out of that in getting some one-on-one time.
Yes.
Listening to books or whatever it is, chatting, listening to the music of the day that Naveena wants to listen to.
Yeah, you know,
that's
nice.
The regular pop, like, what's it called? Kids pop. Kids bop.
Kids bop. Oh, yeah.
That's her favorite thing right now. Okay. So we listen to a lot of that.
We've listened to that before. It's basically, just a different version of all the same popular songs.
Yeah. Sung by children.
Yeah, that's right.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something that they know. And with us, McKenna will wake up often like 8:15 or something like that.
Right.
And other parents are astounded at how fast we're able to
get out of the house.
You know, she's able to get things together, eat, and we're getting out of the house. And we refuse to drive for the most part. So we're walking or biking to school, and we get there almost always on time.
Yeah.
But the Mondays, usually not. Tuesdays, maybe not as well. But I'm okay with it, at least right now. I've rationalized it. I'm not as pushy this time, particularly because we're in the COVID times.
Right.
I find it actually a double benefit, actually, because now there aren't any kids around. Like, it's a dog's breakfast with kids running around everywhere right now. And so if we're all trying to be socially distant, everyone's, you know, yes, they're outside, but they're all crossing one another and things like that. So to me, showing up later is actually more safe anyways, because there's less interactions with people.
Yeah.
They're going right to school, so our class. So I sort of rationalize it that way too. But
yeah, well, that works. That works.
So, I have two reasons for if someone chastises me for bringing McKenna to school.
I'm protecting my family, damn it. So why don't we'll leave it there. So, absolutely. You know, I think the lost hour of sleep is, if we were going to go back on it, really is a matter of cognitive maturity and development. Like, that's
huge.
That 2-year difference is massive. So if we can get our kids to sleep a little bit earlier, that'll be a really good idea. So maybe in another episode, we'll talk about sleep training for young kids, sleep routines for older kids. You know, there's a few topics that we can drive out of this. And why don't next week or the week after, we can talk a little bit about what we did to try to increase the amount of sleep that our kids were getting. What techniques did we use in order to increase? Were we actually successful in being able to add an extra half an hour per child to their sleep? So with that, we'll close it out for this week. Thanks so much, everybody, for listening. Again, like last time, make sure you check out our social media, our Instagram page and TikTok. Please feel free to share this podcast with anybody you think it might be useful for. There's lots of flawed dads out there that could probably use a good laugh and a little bit of education. We're always improving, so please take an opportunity to do that.
And just one other point that I had just about podcasts as well, what we've learned, like YouTube or anything else, it really helps us out if you do enjoy this to actually rate it, ideally 5 stars or the highest opportunity, and subscribe to us as well, because the bots like those sort of things and it helps us get this message out to other people.
And if you want to email us, I'll put our email in the description. It's theflaweddad@gmail.com. So with that, thanks so much. We'll see you next week.
Have a good night, day, whatever.